This evening we've come to the issue of Paul in his prayer. We talked last time about the general sense of the prayer, but he says three that he remembers or doesn't stop remembering: their work of faith, their labor of love, and their patience of hope in the Lord Jesus Christ. And he does this remembering before God. Anyway, I wanted to start this evening on this issue of the work of faith because he's got a trilogy, obviously. In 1 Corinthians 13, he said, now abide faith, hope, and love, these three. And in this case, he's got the work of faith and the labor of love and the patience of hope. So they're all three there in a little bit different order. But I had this question in my own mind when I first read the words. What's the difference between a work of faith and a labor of love? Both of them sound like work to me. But it's pretty obvious from our studies in Revelation 3 and the letters, well, chapter 2 and 3, because in the letter to the pastor of the church in Ephesus, he was a diligent, hardworking enthusiast about the integrity of the word, and he was absolutely committed to ferreting out anybody who was a false apostle. But Jesus said, if you don't correct the problem that you've got, I'm going to come take your candlestick away. And that was probably the most doctrinal church in the seven that he addressed. And it's in a very real sense saying, look, I'd rather just not have you say anything if you're going to say it for the wrong reason. It's kind of like I've heard on occasion people say that they felt like that God was calling them into the ministry, but they just refused, said no, whatever. And I thought, well, that's good, because if God isn't worthy of your service, you don't have anything to say to anybody else, because you don't. If the relationship we have with God is so shallow that we don't even respect what he respects, we don't love what he loves, we don't believe what he says, in that case, we don't have anything to share with anybody else. And it's really quite contradictory for us if we do say something that we're not living. So I want us to think this evening about this work of faith. It's pretty clear. Even in 1 Corinthians 13, he starts out by saying, if you have faith to move mountains, but you don't have love, it profits you nothing. So even there is a distinction between a work of faith or a labor of love, because it's obvious you can split those off. In fact, I think it's real obvious that you can split them off whenever you hear the sad stories of men who get burned out in the ministry and just quit. I know what that's like. I've done it. But the point is, when the work becomes a labor, a toil that you just do because you got to do it, you'll burn out pretty fast, because you can't keep whipping yourself along the trail and keep yourself going forever if you really have no other motivation than the fact that you got to do it. However, Paul did say, didn't he, on one occasion, that if he preached the gospel willingly, he had a reward, but if against his will, he'd better do it anyway, because he knew the fear of the Lord. So I'm not arguing for doing it anyway. I'd much, much rather that we have the blend of work of faith, labor of love, and patience of hope. But I want us to think about working and the faith issues that are involved in that, because the work in this particular verse doesn't have a specific identification in terms of what he's actually talking about. The word work means to spend energy. So when you put forth effort and you're expending the energy, that's called work. But that it's a work of faith means that the work that's being done is being driven by something you believe. And that's pretty much true across the board. Most of us even will work at some things that we really don't enjoy doing it at all, but we do it because of something we believe about the necessity of getting that done, or the part that particular activity plays in our own well-being and perhaps the well-being of our family and friends. So when we talk about a work of faith, we're talking about something that's driven by conviction. And he was commending them for that. And the only other time that Paul used the same word work in this letter is in chapter 5, verse 13. And it's kind of an interesting way that he uses it, because he says in verse 12, we beseech you, brethren, to know them that labor among you and are over you in the Lord and admonish you to esteem them exceedingly highly in love for their work's sake. And he uses the word labor in verse 12 and their work in verse 13. But what he's driving at there is that apparently even Paul understood pretty clearly how important the local church and its leadership was in terms of the necessity of the work. And when he's talking about that, he's also dealing with the issue of those who spend a lot of effort in teaching. I don't know if that's in 2 Thessalonians. But anyway, wherever it is, there is a lot of labor that is necessary for the work of the faith. And he's writing this to all the believers in Thessalonica. I mean, obviously the leaders are working. They're to be esteemed because of that. But I got to thinking about that. How much do we actually connect what we're doing as when we're spending labor to the kinds of things that Paul is talking about in the gospel or in this book, where he's talking about their work being spoken of by people from all over the countries because of what the Lord had done in their lives? And then I got to thinking about the way the body and the scriptures is used as a example of the body of Christ. We even talked a little bit about this last night in our study, but you can't expect the same kind of outcome or even the same level of energy or even the same type of effort from your little toe that you expect from your thumb. We intuitively know that there are so many differences about our bodies and they each have their own little part to play. But we're also aware of how it affects the whole body when some of those parts are not doing what they're supposed to be doing and the body is starting to feel the crumbling effect of something that's not in order. And I really do, when you stop and think about all the things that have to be done for the work of the ministry to go on here at Broadlands, how many things are there? There's vacuuming the carpet after the kids have had their cookies or their adults have sprinkled their cornbread around on the ground. But there's staying with the little kids when you'd rather be in church, or perhaps you'd rather be with the kids than in church, but whichever way it works. But when you stop and just add up all of the things that have to be done, because there's always somebody having to do something because that's just the way everything works. And we have so many things going on, individually little things. I know David, for example, can't seem to get away from this Wi-Fi stuff because every time he turns around, something's going wrong. And, you know, we tried to make videos of our studies on deliberate discipleship, and 2 out of 5 of them now have bombed because the equipment's not working like it's supposed to. And it's just that there are all these little things that have to be done. And the thing that I want us to understand about the work of faith is that we need to be plugged in to what God is interested in our spending our labor on, because we only have so much and we can only do so much, and we need to make sure that the parts that we're doing are important. And that doesn't take away from going to work, making a living, that, you know, because some of what you're earning there is going to come back into the church to pay the bills and that kind of thing. So almost everything that you think about, you can tie that back to the contribution that it's making to the believers and the ministry, the work of ministry. And when it's a work of faith, it's supposed to be driven by faith. So how do you understand whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all the glory of God? Pretty much carries everything, doesn't it? And so even when you're pulling your socks on your feet and your toenails catch in the weave, you know, you've all had that experience. Even those little things.
You're pulling them socks on your feet, you're old, and you flip over on your head.
And then somebody's got to come and pick you up off your head. So there's always more work to be done. The thing, though, that I'm driving at is that the issue that Paul is dealing with here is, for the most part, in 2 Thessalonians 1:11, he refers again to the work of faith. But That's without the definite article, the work of the faith, because that's the way it is up there in the first reference. But he leaves it open because he says, and your desires for goodness, your work of faith and every desire for goodness. And he's praying to God for his provision of heart strengthening in the pursuit of every good work. So we need to be encouraged to keep on keeping on, especially when things do go south and it's difficult. How? Go ahead.
I think of the work of faith. I have to go in my mind to scripture like it says it's impossible to please God without faith.
Yes.
And another example, if you had the faith of a mustard seed, you could cast a mountain into the water.
Mm-hmm.
And God gives every person before they become a believer enough faith to do that. He imparts to them faith to make that commitment.
Mm-hmm.
So the work of faith, to me, has to tie into all of those uses of faith. It's our response to something that's proven useful, beneficial to us,
mm-hmm.
not necessarily monetary-wise, that we trust in. And based upon that, buy into the work of the ministry in this church or
wherever we are.
At your workplace or as you cross the fence with your neighbor. Or
yeah. And that's one of the issues that I want you to recognize from verse 8 of chapter 1 of 1 Thessalonians, because he talks about this work that has created a sounding forth of the word of the Lord beyond the boundaries of Macedonia and Achaia. In every place your faith toward God has gone forth. Their faith has gone forth. But their faith is going forth because of what they're doing. People are seeing what they're doing, and then they're listening to the words that they're saying. And when the things that they're doing are buttressed by things that come from God, because all faith has to have its beginning in either something God is or something He said. Otherwise, you're just dreaming. Faith is always going to be locked into the reality of who God is and some of the things that He said. But in this case, one of the issues of the work of faith is this propagation of the truth. And that's why we have missionaries on our list of places or people that we support and that kind of thing, because it's our privilege, actually, to be involved in the ministry of the gospel in lots of places. I was reminded last night, I started my seminary education after bailing out of the ministry. I'd gone from Bible college into church ministry and stayed there 2.5 years and couldn't take it. Not because the people were hard on me, they weren't. It was just that I was so young and just didn't feel like I was adequate for any of that stuff. And the truth was, I wasn't. But that's not the problem. The problem is I didn't believe that God was adequate. Anyway, I bailed out, so I went to seminary. Well, I was there a year in summer term, and a little church in Moss Bluff asked us to come down and pastor there for a while and help them out of a bind. And so we told the seminary we'd take a year leave absence and go down there and do what we could. And the seminary granted it, so we took off and moved down here. And a year later, the seminary contacts us, said, "Are you going to come back?" And I said, "I can't. There's some things that I had in mind that needed to be accomplished before I left here. And they're not accomplished, so I'm not going to be back at that time." And in the meantime, we'd started a Bible study over in Jasper, Texas. And so the next year went around and we started a church over there and moved over to Jasper. Well, in our time over there, we moved over there in 76. And sometime in about 82, this lady come into our house and said, "Daryl, when are you going to go back to seminary and finish your degree?" And Hazel and I had mentioned that over the years, a little bit here and a little bit there. But when she asked that question, so we both began to seriously consider finishing up the degree program. And it's a 4-year program, and I only had a year behind, so I had 3 years to go. There's a point to this story. We were going to move to Dallas and finish the school thing. I was going to resign from the church in Jasper. But the people asked me not to commute So I left on Monday and came back on Thursday. It's a 10,000-mile semester every semester, back and forth, back and forth. But I went up to the seminary before we started it and to talk to two men. Both of them I had high regard for. Both of them had a mentoring impact on my life. And I said to one of them, I said, I'm thinking about the possibility of coming back to school. What do you think? And one of them said, I don't think you need to. You're already doing the work and you don't need to come back here. And the other one said, I definitely feel like you ought to. I said, so much for the advice. But in the process of meeting with them, when I was walking off the campus, I really, really, really hated the thought of going back to seminary. I hated it. But I also felt compelled. So I told Hazel, I guess we're going to go back to school. Well, she said, how are we going to pay for that? I said, that's not my problem. If he supplies, we'll do it. If he doesn't, I don't have to go. And it was fun the next 3 years to watch how God just met the financial responsibilities of living and going to school. One January, I wrote a check to cover our tuition and part of my books. And I called Hazel and told her, don't write any checks. We don't have any money in the bank. And I'd even mostly emptied my wallet for the books. And the guy walked into my brother's office one day and said, you know anybody that needs any financial help? And he said, yeah, my brother does. So I wrote a check for $600 right there on the spot and didn't know me from Adam. And he knew my brother. I mean, but by the end of the month, we had as much money in the bank at the end as we had before the beginning. And that was a $2,000 expense, that tuition and books and stuff. And it just happened. For 3 years, we had this routine going on. And I mention all of that because the issue of a work of faith is that you're doing something you feel compelled to do because God has said so. It's either something that you've found in the scriptures that have spoken to your heart and you say, I need to be doing this or I need to be involved in that. Or it's something that His Spirit has welled up inside of you with this growing conviction that you need to be doing whatever it is He's put on your heart. And that's what a work of faith is when you yield to that sense that God's calling you and you're going to do it. But you don't do it on your own. You do it by His provision and in His strength. And this is what these people are doing. That's why this church had the reputation that it had, is that they were operating by that. And I want us to look for the few minutes that we have left in relation to the issue of faith in this letter. Because in verse 3, it's a work of faith. It's an action that you engage in because you believe something about either who God is, what He's like, or what He said. And those things will be at work in your hearts and minds. And the next use is the one in verse 8 that we've just referred to when it says that put from you as sounded forth the word of the Lord so that in every place your faith toward God has gone forth. So we don't even have to say anything, he said. And then in 3:2, he addresses the issue of how they needed to be strengthened. You know the story. He'd gotten run out of Thessalonica after 3 Sabbaths and they wouldn't tolerate him. So, I mean, the opposition wouldn't. So the brethren sent him away to Berea and then on to Athens. But it says, we would, in chapter 2, verse 18, we would fain have come to you, I, Paul, once and again, and Satan hindered us. And he says, when we could no longer forbear, verse 1 of chapter 3, we thought it good to be left behind at Athens alone and sent Timothy, our brother and God's minister in the gospel of Christ, to establish you and to comfort you concerning your faith. In other words, he was concerned that these folks were going to lose that initial enthusiasm that was driven by what they believed. Because you know as well as I do that conviction can ebb and flow depending on how things are going day by day. And so he sent Timothy down there to establish and comfort them so that no one would be moved by these afflictions. Because you know we're appointed to those. So in verse 6 he says, when I could no longer forbear, I sent that I might know your faith. Lest by any means the tempter had tempted you and our labor should be in vain. That was his concern, and the reason he had it. Remember the Galatians. So when Timothy came, he brought us the glad tidings of your faith and love. And what he basically said is that those people have a good remembrance of you, always longing to see you. And what does that mean? Well, it means first that they had a good relationship and that they really wanted to see him again. But more than that, for Paul, it meant that they were buying into his message. They cared about him because they believed what he said was true. And that was a real encouragement to him, because if Timothy had come back and said to Paul, "Paul, those people down there have been told that you're not really who you say you are, and they're not going to follow what we taught them when they were there." You can imagine how Paul would have felt. Well, their faith and strengthened his faith. He wanted to go down there to strengthen theirs, but their eagerness to be driven by what they believed, to the work that they were doing, that eagerness built his faith up, and Timothy. So when you look at this influence of faith all the way through, he says that it's driven by the continual ministry of the presence of the tempter. He's trying to stop us from doing what it is we're doing. And I've thought a little bit about that, about the work of the church here. Because if we stand firm on the preaching of the word, we're going to run into some issues sooner or later. It's inevitable. But one of the outcomes, according to chapter 3, verse 7, of faith is comfort. Those who are working to strengthen it. And it makes a reference to the perennial need to shore up the foundations of faith. Chapter 3, verse 10. And then in chapter 5, verse 8, it makes faith the breastplate along with love. You know what the breastplate is. Covers your heart. Keeps you from getting killed. And it's a combination of faith and love. And of course, Ephesians chapter 6, he talks about the breastplate. And it's designed to enable us, according to Ephesians 6:16, to quench the fiery darts of the wicked one. What does that mean? Well, it means that he's making accusations here and there and everywhere. He's trying to blow us away by all the accusations he can level, so that we'll stop the work of faith. We will stop believing and therefore stop working. And there isn't anything harder to deal with than when you're starting to be accused of things you didn't do. You know you didn't do them, but everybody else seems to think you did, and they're accusing you and all that kind of stuff. That just wears on you, and you got to have some faith to keep on with the keeping on. And that's what he's driving at there in chapter 5, verse 8. The fiery darts are quenched by the shield of faith. And then there are five more references to faith in the second letter, but the overall issue of the work of faith is the active participation of the person who believes, and as a consequence is doing whatever part he or she has in spreading the word. Whether it's keeping the nursery or running the vacuum cleaner, fixing the Wi-Fi, whatever. All of those things have to be done. Even mowing the grass becomes a work of faith when it's kept in the right perspective. So that's what I wanted us to think about this evening, because that was one of the things that Paul pulled up before God the Father. He remembered these people and their work of faith. Okay?